Catch the Wind, See Us Spin by Kilcasey. Summary. Dean is given an out, but reality is a strange, fickle bitch. You're not hungry, Dean, because inside, you're already dead. Famine. Lucifer dies like a man. He dies with slack, slightly parted lips, his teeth neat and white, all in a line. His cheeks are a deep, burning red, and his eyes are too. The empty shell he leaves behind in an abandoned warehouse in Detroit is slumped against a wooden pillar in old jeans and a stained wife beater. His arms hang limp at his sides. Dean looks at him for a long time. Everything is quiet now, suddenly calm, like maybe the world knows what just happened. Dean touches the hard toe of his boot to the man's face, and it falls to the side. His hair is pale and long, so Dean can only see slivers of the man's neck. There's thick, almost black blood oozing from his ear. It drips onto his sleeve. Dean watches. He can't remember when Lucifer died, only that it's been a long time. He drops his useless gun and doesn't hear it hit the floor. His hands cramping from the tight grip, and he flexes his fingers gingerly. His knuckles are stiff, and the skin's splitting, and it stings. He raises the same hand to his face and scrubs it over his tired eyes. Dean closes his eyes just for a second, and there's nothing there. It's all empty. And there's a warm hand on his face, and running through his hair and down his temples, soft, careful fingertips that feel good against his skin. Warm, wet breaths are blown over his face until the person, man, definitely a man's voice, talks low and husky, says, "Dean, can you hear me? Are you okay?" Dean tries to open his eyes, but they hurt. God, they really hurt. They feel wet and sore, like his eyelashes are gummed together. He takes a couple shallow breaths and tries again. Opens them very slightly. The sky is bright and blue above him. He blinks a few times until everything clears up. "Good," the voice says. "That's good, Dean." He feels a hand cover his own. It holds tight. He weakly strokes his thumb across it. "I'm not dead. See? I moved." And the man grips his thumb in his hand. He strokes his own thumb down it, real slow, and exhales. "You scared me," he says. "Cass?" Dean croaks, finally placing the voice. "I'm here," Cass says, sounding relieved Dean's brains aren't totally scrambled or whatever. It all comes together slowly, little things like feeling wetness seep through his jeans, feeling the soft grass under his face, hearing leaves being blown in the wind. He can smell engine oil, strong and pungent in the fresh air. It makes him choke. He sputters a few harsh, wet coughs before Cass kneels down behind him, his chest not quite touching Dean's back but close enough, and starts to rub slow circles across his shoulders. Says quietly, "Shh, shh, take it easy, okay? Don't exert yourself." Dean has a smart-ass retort that he doesn't have the strength to say. Cass's hands feel nice, soothing away aches he didn't even notice were there. He wants to say something like, "Hey, this probably looks a bit weird," but somehow he feels so horrid, so wrong, that he can't say no, can't deny such a simple pleasure. His eyes are sore, and he can't keep them open long, and there's a tinny ringing sound in his ears, and he doesn't know what the fuck is going on or what happened. And he can feel the ever-so-light press of Cass's chest against his back as he continues to rub in slow circles. Dean starts to cough again. "You're okay, Dean," Cass says, voice soft. "You're not Cass," Dean manages to say through coughs. There's a little pause before Cass says, "I always said you smoked too much in college." He sounds a little worried, Dean thinks. His hands leave Dean's back as he makes to stand up. "Stay here and try not to move. I'll go get help, Dean. Just try not to move, okay?" "Am I dying?" Dean thinks vaguely. "Fly me to a hospital if you can't heal me yourself." He hears grass squelch under Cass's shoes as he hurries off on foot. Dean tries to raise his head to see, but a sharp pain shoots through the back of his neck, and he abandons that idea. He lays his head gingerly back on the grass and stretches his legs out a little more. He wonders where he is and just what the fuck happened. He just feels so confused. Something feels terribly wrong deep down, but he can't place just what. He doesn't move much more. Cass said not to. Dean watches the sky. He gets a strange 2D view of the world. Birds fly past sometimes, but mostly the sky is blue, and the clouds move awfully slow. His eyes water. He hopes he hasn't broken his back, but it's only a distant thought. His brain feels all foggy and muddled, and nothing really makes much sense. He tries racking his brain, but little comes to him. He can see the vague shadow of a short man, dark and cloaked. There was a strong smell of ammonia, he's sure, and that overshadows everything. It had burned at his nose and the back of his throat. He could taste it. Was he mugged or something? Dean lets out a low breath. He closes his stinging eyes. Cass is back pretty quick. Dean hears the squelching of fresh, wet mud as he hurries back. Another set of heavy feet follow behind him, and then a tall, dark shadow covers the sky from view. A girl's voice swears. "Shit, Dean," comes Sam's voice. "I don't know if he's..." "He hit his head," Cass says. "I didn't want to move him." A small, warm hand feels around his wrist to check his pulse. "It's Jess," says a soft voice to his side. "You're going to be okay, Dean. Just take it easy." He can smell sweet vanilla. Her long hair tickles his face as she leans over him. "You had a fall," Jess says. "We'll make fun of you for it later. Don't worry." "How'd you fall off, you idiot?" Sam says, sounding troubled. "I told him to take a break," Cass says with a sigh. He was determined to finish the roof before it gets dark. "Roof? Why would he be on a fucking roof?" "I was attacked," Dean wants to say, but when he tries to talk, Jess says, "Don't strain yourself, honey. Just try to relax. We're going to move you inside." "Or Sam's going to move you inside, aren't you, Sam?" Sam says something Dean doesn't catch, and Jess shushes him. "Why are you here?" Dean thinks. Something about all this bothers him, but he can't put his finger on what. A solid arm finds its way under his neck, and another under his knees before Sam says seriously, "Are you sure this is okay?" He must get the okay because he lifts Dean into the air with a little grunt. He can feel his own arms hang limply at his sides. Cass starts to talk. "I'll run ahead, get some blankets or something. Do you think he can drink coffee? I'll make coffee in case he..." "He's fine, Cass," Jess says softly. "He just got the wind knocked out of him. You'll see." "Thank you," Cass says. "This isn't right," Dean thinks vaguely. But then the world goes black. The doctor holds up a card which Dean doesn't bother looking at. The room looks like it was probably once white and clean before the blast. He looks at the diagram on the wall about which parts of the brain go where and what they all do. Your temporal lobe controls your speech and hearing. Most of that part is burned off. The doctor is squinting at him. He can't see the same now. Dean almost wants to apologize to him for offing the devil in his neighborhood. The doctor knocks on the card and raises his eyebrow. "Read it." Dean reads it and nods. "Where's my brother?" he asks. "I want to see Sam again." The doctor hesitates before he nods and stands up. He beckons Dean to follow him, which he does. The corridors are mostly empty. Most people are dead here. The doctor leads him to a small closed ward and to the furthest bed. The curtains are drawn and he throws them back. Sam is fast asleep on the bed. Tubes and wires and all sorts of medical shit stick out of his arms. The doctor insists he's healing, but that doesn't mean anything until Sam opens his eyes and takes his first unaided breath. The doctor's watching him. He's pretty tall and his hair's graying. "Could you... give us a minute," Dean says. The doctor picks up Sam's file and takes a pen from his pocket. He scribbles something on the back of the sheet of paper, then hands it to Dean. "I'll be in my office. Shout if you need me. Don't do anything stupid," it says in messy handwriting. "Sure," Dean says. The doctor gives him a final nod, sets the clipboard and pen down, and closes the curtains behind him. Must be habit, Dean thinks. There's nobody going to interrupt them here. Dean takes a seat next to Sam and watches him just breathe for a long time. He'll check the monitor, put his hand just above Sam's mouth sometimes, after having a sudden panic, just to check Sam's still breathing. His hand hovers just above Sam's. "Come on, man," Dean says, closing his eyes. Everything is empty again, and he blinks a few times. "Shit," he says warily, and he shakes his head. "I know I said I wanted a quiet life, but being deaf sucks." Sam doesn't laugh, or if he does, Dean doesn't hear it anyway. "What happened?" Dean says groggily. "Dean," Cass says. He lets go of Dean's hand to get up in his face. He looks a bit wild, like he's been pulling out his hair. "How do you feel?" "Head hurts," Dean mutters. "It will. Jess says you'll be okay," Cass says, sounding a little dubious. "I was going to call an ambulance, but..." "I told you we should have got medical insurance years ago. If Jess wasn't here..." He pauses for a second, then says, "Do you want coffee? I made you coffee. Or water. I could get water." "I'm fine," Dean says. He pushes himself up onto his elbows and casts a glance around the room. They're in a glass room. A conservatory? He's draped in a thick tartan blanket on an old-looking green couch. The leather is sticky against the bare skin of his arms. It all looks a little familiar. "Where are we?" Cass says, looking around. "Home." "Home." Dean shakes his head and looks at Cass. Really looks at him. "You," he murmurs, not really knowing where he's going with it. Cass's hair looks a little too long. It's almost skimming his shoulders. His eyes are still a bright, clear blue. He's wearing loose, faded denims and a simple white shirt, sleeves rolled up to his elbows. He's got a delicate beaded bracelet around his wrist. As he reaches his hand up cautiously, Dean grabs at the bracelet and pulls Cass forward. Cass lurches toward him with a little grunt. Dean runs his fingers over the beads. "I bought this," Dean says, not quite sure if he's right. "You did," Cass says. "For you?" "Yes," Cass says quietly, his eyes on the bracelet. "I remember," Dean says, running his finger underneath the bracelet, brushing against the inside of Cass's wrist. "I remember, but I don't. Not really." "We should take you to a doctor," Cass says. Dean doesn't let go of Cass's bracelet. It's pretty, neat little beads all in a row, like teeth. He runs his fingertip over them, counting them. Cass watches him, brow furrowed. His arm shakes ever so slightly. "Dean," he says quietly, intimately, and Dean looks up. Cass tilts his head to the side and gives him a weak smile. "We should get you to a doctor," he says, removing Dean's hands from his wrist with gentle hands. "I'll just sleep it off," Dean says, even though his head's beginning to ache. "Sure," Cass says smoothly. "You just sleep off concussion or amnesia or whatever. Just tell me one thing, Dean. What's my surname?" Says Dean. "Exactly," Cass says, shaking his head. "Sam offered to drive." "'Kay," says Dean, giving in. Cass walks over to the doorway, then stops. He turns back and looks at Dean. Dean can't quite place his expression. It's soft but intense, and he can't figure it out. Cass shakes his head and says, "Don't scare me like that again." He walks away. Dean stares at the door for a long time, but then his eyes begin to ache, and he closes them. The doctor shines a penlight in his eyes. He's pretty tall, and his hair's graying. He has a deep voice when he says to Cass, like Dean isn't sitting right there, "He's concussed. You said he hit his head pretty bad?" "He fell off a roof." "I was replacing broken slates," Dean says, a vague memory in the back of his mind. There was someone there, he thinks. A dark someone in a cloak. But that's crazy, and he really doesn't want the doctor to think he's crazy right now, so he doesn't mention it. He's not even sure he's not imagining it. "You'll be fine," the doctor says, setting down his light. "Just don't be climbing on roofs for a while, okay?" "Yeah." Cass stands. "Dean, you... Sam's waiting in the car. You go. I'll finish up here." "Right," Dean says. He stands on shaky legs and Cass's hand shoots out to help steady him. His hand is firm and warm. "I'm good," Dean says, shrugging him off. His head swims as he walks down the busy corridor. One nurse even asks if he really thinks he should be up and about alone. He feels sick and confused, and nothing makes much sense. He feels like he doesn't belong in his own skin, like it's not his, not really. Sam must have seen him at the door because he's there in moments. He hooks an arm underneath Dean's and around his back, letting him balance against him. "The doctor actually let you out of there?" Sam says. "Dude, you really don't have any medical cover, do you?" You should look into that. Dean just grunts at him and lets Sam guide him toward the car. Sam has a silver estate car that looks pretty new. He helps Dean into the back seat and mutters some shit about seatbelts. Dean ignores him. He finds an old hoodie in the back. It's green and there's faded lettering on the front. It looks a little familiar, and he holds it up in front of him. "Yeah, it's yours," Sam says, as he climbs into the driver's seat. "Huh," Dean says. "Figured you'd want to change out of those clothes. You smell like the inside of an engine, man." Dean pulls off his flannel shirt, and yeah, that's where the oil smell was coming from. He's got a cheap white undershirt on, and he pulls the hoodie over it. It's a little too big, enough that he wonders if it really is his. He shoves his hands into the big front pocket and leans further back. His head pounds. "I have a concussion." "Figured," Sam says. "I think it's amnesia." Sam starts up the engine and sets the heating up high. He looks at Dean a lot through the mirror. Dean's pretty sure he thinks he doesn't notice, but he does. He looks worried. He talks after a while. Me and Jess, we'll stay for a while longer. No reason to hurry back, you know." "Yeah," says Dean. Sam casts a look at his watch, then at the door. "I don't remember much," Dean says. "I feel like my brain's scrambled eggs." "You should probably get some sleep. You can sleep after a concussion, right?" "Doc says there's a good 80% chance I'll wake up." "That's not funny." "I'm not laughing," says Dean. He could sleep. He feels like he could sleep for a long time. He takes to watching the hospital doors, watching for Cass. It feels steady to know something. To know Cass will be back. To know who Cass is, when so little else makes sense. He says. "About Cass."
"Yeah?"
"Why do I think he can fly?"
"How hard did you hit your head, dude?" Sam mutters. He casts him a glance in the mirror.
"Pretty hard, I guess," Dean says. "Did he take lessons?"
"He can't even drive a car."
Sam watches him in the mirror for a long time. He looks like, at any second, or at any mention of anyone flying, he's gonna march Dean straight back into the hospital and demand a brain scan. Dean closes his eyes and tries to relax, go into a zen place or something. Cass isn't too long. He looks a little pissed as he slides into the passenger side, muttering about bills. They don't talk much, for which Dean is glad. Cass comes to Sam's bedside eventually. He looks the same as ever, really, if maybe a little older somehow. He stands at the foot of the bed for a while, and Dean doesn't look at him much. He wonders why Cass is so quiet, why he doesn't have something to say about all this, until it hits him. Cass's lips are moving.
"I'm deaf," Dean says. Cass's brows furrow.
"Lucifer, when he, you know, so I'm deaf now. Michael couldn't stop the deafness. Something about grace. I don't know." Dean pauses, adds, "I'm still alive, though, which is something, I guess." Cass walks over and picks up the doctor's clipboard. On it, he writes, "You did well."
"Right."
"I'm proud of you."
"Yeah."
Sam doesn't move once. His lips are tinged blue, but the machine says he's still hanging on. Dean doesn't suppose there's more the doctor can do until help gets here. The land is split, and the water is boiling, and the sky outside is a burning, angry black, and this is when it should all be over, and it just isn't. Or it is, maybe, but in the worst way. "You weren't there," Dean says quietly. It's odd not to hear your own voice when you talk. You just have to assume what you're saying is right. He scratches his arm absently. "At the end, you weren't there."
"I'm sorry," Cass writes on the paper.
"Uh-huh.
Me too."
"I wanted to be there." Cass stands at the foot of Sam's bed still. His lips move, and Dean doesn't bother trying to figure out what he's saying. He doesn't tell him to write it down. He just lets Cass talk unheard. He doesn't even care why so much. Cass wasn't there when he needed him, and it's too late to care why. He stares at Sam's face. Cass doesn't leave. "Home, sweet home," Cass says, as he leads Dean through the front door. He has an arm tucked around Dean's back, hand just at his waist. He's not as strong as Sam, so Dean's careful not to lay too much of his weight on him. His hair's soft where it brushes Dean's face. "Has your hair always been this long?"
He feels like it's okay to reach out, to touch Cass's hair, and he does. For a while, Cass says, with a hint of a smile. It grows, you see.
Right.
Cass leads him upstairs. There are a few frames hanging on the wall. A watercolor of an angel, a sepia photo of Dean and Cass, pushed real close together, smiling into the camera. Jess in a wedding dress, Sam at her side, grinning, and he and Cass on either side. Dean shakes his head a little, little sparks fire in his brain. He can remember the punch at the wedding. He's sure somebody, Dad maybe, topped it up with strong liquor. He says as much to Cass, who chuckles. Cass pushes open a door. In here, Mr. Budwig. I hate that movie. I know, Cass says. He leads him into a long, bright room. There's not much furniture, but it's nice. Airy or something. The sheets are cream with some kind of flowery brown pattern. Cass tells him to wait there as he pulls back the sheet and fluffs up a pillow. In. Dean walks over slowly and climbs in. Cass's hand still rests on the pillow. He helps Dean to ease his head down. He leaves his arm there. His face is just inches from Dean's, his breath warm and steady. He rests his head on the pillow behind Dean's. It can't be all that comfortable, still standing. I saw you fall, Cass says after a while. His breath ghosts across Dean's neck. We're like, together, aren't we? Cass huffs out a breath, mutters, obviously I was hoping you'd forgotten that fact.
Nah, says Dean, I remember you.
Good, says Cass, that's good, that you remember me.
Yeah.
Cass smooths a hand over his hair. The touch is familiar, real. It's strangely intimate. Dean's not really sure if he's okay with it, but he knows he should be, and that's enough. He lies still, and Cass is there. He wonders if Cass is always there. How many times they've done this before, been this close. I think I dreamt you were an angel, Dean says.
An angel?
Yeah, with, like, wings. You flew about.
Try to sleep, Dean, Cass says. I'll sleep in the guest room so as not to disturb you.
Stay.
You should stay. This is your bed, too.
Cass hesitates for a moment before he moves away. He pulls his shirt over his head, showing a lean, lightly tanned chest, shucks off his jeans unashamedly, and leaves them on the floor. He stretches. Dean watches. It seems natural somehow, like he's supposed to be here, yet there's this little voice saying something's wrong. A little man in a dark cloak. A warning. Cass climbs into bed next to him and pushes himself close, a warm weight against Dean's side. He lays a hand over Dean's chest. You'll feel better in the morning. Doctor's orders.
Sure, Dean says.
He waits a while until Cass is asleep and gently reaches a hand around his back, feeling for something, anything. Wings or stumps, just something, to say he hasn't completely lost his shit. There's just smooth, slightly clammy planes of skin. Dean runs a hand over his eyes. He sleeps much later and dreams about his tattooed man in a black cloak. He wakes in a sweaty tangle of limbs. Cass's chest is pressed firm against his side, one of his legs swung over Dean's own. He's still fast asleep, his hair in his face, and Dean smiles. He gives him a little push to the side, letting his palm rest on the soft skin of Cass's lower belly. Cass stirs.
Hey, Dean says.
Cass cracks open an eye, says, hey, with a faint smile.
I feel better. I remember some stuff. I remember you.
I'm glad.
Cass doesn't look all that glad.
What's wrong? Cass shakes his head and rubs his eyes with a closed fist.
Nothing. I'm happy for you.
Cass, says Dean, looking him in the eye. Don't lie to me. Don't do that.
Let's not argue. Not now.
We argue?
A lot, Cass says.
Yeah, Dean says. He runs his thumb up Cass's side. Let's not argue now.
A clean slate?
I'm all about clean slates, Dean says.
Good.
Cass lays his head on Dean's chest.
That's good.
Me too. Dean showers and shaves, and comes down to breakfast feeling like a whole new Dean, or maybe like the old Dean he can't quite remember. He pads into the kitchen in a pair of old sweats and finds Cass pouring two mugs of coffee. He's only wearing boxers. Dean stands in the doorway and watches him, watches as he flips on the TV and changes channels to Fox News. Cass leans against the counter, coffee in hand, and listens to the presenter babble on about some celebrity divorce, battle, or whatever. Dean smiles. He takes a step forward and it happens. The screen flashes, just for a second, to a man, dark-skinned and tattooed, and grinning at him. His eyes are wild and bright. Dean blinks and he's gone. Cass doesn't even seem to notice. He sips his coffee and scratches absently at his side. Did you see that? Cass's head snaps around. I didn't hear you coming down. Are you okay? Do you feel dizzy or anything? Did you see that? Dean says, louder. See what? Cass frowns. There was... Dean shakes his head. Nothing. Nothing. It doesn't matter. Just forget it, okay? I'm just a bit... nuts. It's the concussion, Cass says sympathetically. Yeah, okay. Dean sits down at the table. Cass passes him his coffee. It's still hot. Thanks, Dean mumbles. He looks around the kitchen. Their kitchen. Says, we have a really nice house. That'll be why we have no money. Oh. Dean takes a sip of his coffee. It's almost perfect. I feel like everything's new. Maybe that's a good thing. Cass sits next to him instead of across. His knee just touches Dean's. I called your work. Bobby says not to worry, to take as much time off as you need. I think he was glad to be rid of you for a while, honestly. Funny. Dean takes another sip of coffee. And I'm a mechanic. Cass nods. This is weird, he says. I feel like I'm explaining your life to you when I feel like you should just know. It's just, well, weird. My boyfriend barely knows me. I do know. I've just forgotten. It's all there, like everything feels familiar. I just don't always know why. I'm right here. Anything you want, I'm here. I know, says Dean. Thank you. He lays his hand on the table and Cass's hand covers it. Sam does come around, and they hunt because there's nothing else to do. Cass helps sometimes. He searches for God still, and Dean doesn't see the fucking point at all, but whatever, keeps the guy going. He doesn't learn sign language because who the fuck knows sign language anyway? Sam writes on paper, or gestures, or bodily moves him where he wants, so they don't communicate the same. They can't, when Dean misses half the conversation. Sam can't see that well after the blast, and they get in trouble in Philly. Dean stitches Sam up, and he's kind of glad he can't hear the sounds Sam's probably making as the sharp needle slides through his skin. Dean's stitches are neat. Dean starts losing things, his wallet, his keys, just little things, but Sam calls him on it. Dean can't ever remember much, remember seeing them, and then they were just gone. Cass doesn't show up the same, just now and then, so he and Sam struggle on, but their better days are long gone, and they both know it. Not far from Bobby's, Dean lets a vampire run away because it smiles sweetly at him. He tells Sam it tried to bite him, and it ran when he shoved. Dean gets used to things over time, falls into a nice routine. Work is good, simple. Bobby has the other guys do the heavy-duty stuff. Dean mostly does engine work. He learns how to do resprays, which he never knew to begin with, and it's good. He comes home smelling like oil and metal and washes it all down the drain. Cass makes meals mostly. Things still get to him, though, sometimes, like when he'll see his mom and wonder, why aren't you dead? Even though his mom's been in great health her whole life, and it makes no fucking sense. He asks her if there's ever been a fire in her house, and she asks him why he ever got that idea into his head. I think I got amnesia. Amnesia's pretty rare, Mom says. She pulls another weed from the soil and passes it to Dean. He throws it in the recyclable bag. I just don't feel right. Are you and Cass okay? Sure, Dean says, even though he's not sure. He's sure real couples should hug or kiss or something, and it's been a month since he fell off the roof, and they haven't done anything. He knows he's kissed Cass before. He can remember Cass pressing his lips to Dean's, drunkenly, in the toilets at Dad's birthday party last year. He can remember it, But he still doesn't know what it's like to really kiss Cass, what his lips feel like, or if he's one of those people who uses too much tongue or what. It's like he has bits of the map, but doesn't know where any of it really goes. He can't explain all that, though. Mom stands up and pulls off her gloves, and Dean realizes she's done. He ties the top of the bag. She wipes sweat off her brow with the back of her hand. I think we deserve lemonade after that. Yeah, okay. Dean follows her inside, leaving the bag of weeds at the back door. You know, I think I like this new you, Mom says with a smile. I never thought I'd see the day you'd help me weed the garden. I don't help? Mom gives him a look that says, as if. She pours them two lemonades from a glass jug in the fridge. Ice? Dean shakes his head and she passes him a glass. Dean stands at the window. The sun shines in, bright and warm. Did you ever drop me on my head as a kid? Not that I know, Mom says. She joins him beside the window and looks out. Your dad probably did. Not that he'd admit to it. Dean stares into his glass. What's this about, Dean? I don't know, he says. You said you like this new me. I don't feel like I know who I am or how I should act at all. Sometimes I feel violent, like I get suddenly mad and it passes, but it's still there, just underneath. I feel mad at everything, and I don't want to. You hit your head pretty bad, Mom says. Yeah. You get a clean slate. I don't know, Dean says. Like, I can't remember the old me, so I don't know if that's who I am, or if this is the real me or what. I could have been a dick, or a saint, or a murderer, and my brain's so full of fog, I don't know. Cass expects me to be the same, and I don't know how to be. I don't know what to do. Tell me what to do. You'll figure it out, honey, Mom says. She touches a light hand to the small of his back. I should go home. You probably should. He sets his glass down and leaves it there. A clean slate. He can do that. Cass kisses him for what feels like the first time, and Dean doesn't see it coming at all. He's styling his hair in front of the mirror when a face appears beside his. Hey, Cass says quietly. Hey. Dean turns to face him, and Cass gives him a hard look before he presses his lips to his. Cass's lips are plump and soft, and he moves them slowly, a little unsure. One hand comes up to touch Dean's cheek, and Dean presses forward a little. Cass catches his top lip between his own and sucks lightly. Dean lets out a breath he didn't realize he was holding. Cass pulls back, his hand still on Dean's face, and says, "Was that okay?" Dean nods his head and pulls Cass back, kissing him hard. Their teeth click together, but Dean ignores it. He nips at Cass's bottom lip, and Cass's lips part with a little gasp. His tongue touches Dean's, and Dean pulls him tighter, so Cass ends up straddling his lap. Fuck, he breathes against his lips. Fuck. He doesn't know how he forgot this. It all seems so obvious now. How Cass's lips slip so sweet against his. His sinful tongue and sharp teeth. How he curls his tongue around Dean's own. Dean runs a hand up the back of his shirt over hot, smooth skin and Cass groans. I've missed this, Cass murmurs against his lips. Missed you so much. Dean pulls him down, so Cass's groin is rubbing against his own, and lets out a long moan. It's been a long time, at least 2.5 months he knows of, and he doesn't know how long before he had the accident. He shifts Cass on his knee and curses. Tell me it's always this good. Better, Cass says. He nips at Dean's bottom lip. Jesus. Dean feels real. He feels in the moment. He almost feels like everything is finally right. Then he sees the man in the mirror, wicked eyes shining from behind a dark hood, and he bites Cass's lip hard enough to draw blood. Dean doesn't hear the feathers rustle anymore when Cass arrives. He's just there. Cass takes his little notebook out of his pocket and starts scribbling on it. He's almost at the end. He's going to have to get a new one soon. He holds the paper up to Dean. Have you heard from Sam yet? Dean shakes his head. He's gone, man. He's not coming back. Cass stares at him long and hard. It makes the back of Dean's neck prickle. He turns his head back to the TV. The newsreader's lips move, but he reads the subtitles underneath. Some famous woman is divorcing her famous husband or something. He smiles grimly, says, "Heard from God yet?"
"No," Cass writes on the paper.
"Why'd you even bother? It's all over now anyway."
"I have not given up."
"Good for you," says Dean. He lost the knife earlier and still hasn't found it. He rummages through his bag and through his pockets and still can't find it. He needs to go. Things to kill and all that. He needs a knife, and it's gone. Cass holds it out, balancing on his right palm.
"Where'd you get that?" Dean barks.
Cass passes the knife to his left hand and writes with his right.
"Under your pillow. Why did you put it there?"
Dean frowns.
"I didn't."
"What the fuck?"
"You hid it there earlier."
"Why would you do that?"
"I didn't," says Dean. He snatches the knife from Cass's hand. Cass lets him.
He holds it in his palm and looks at it.
He didn't put it under his pillow. He just didn't.
He closes his fingers around the handle. He looks up, and Cass is gone. The first text message in a long time he gets from Sam says, "Are you doing okay?" Dean replies with, "Yeah." Cass says, "You're not okay."
"I've got a new hunt lined up."
"You tried to kill me, Dean."
"I didn't."
"Don't shut me out. I can help."
"I've got a hunt lined up."
He tries to call Sam later, but he can't fucking hear anything anyway, so he doesn't know how that pans out. Sam doesn't text him back, though. He flicks through the contacts on his phone and deletes everyone who's dead. He can barely remember the sound of Sam's voice when he tries. He drinks most of the night. Christmas is nice. Sam and Jess are up for the week, and they all spend the day at Mom and Dad's. Over grace, Cass thanks the Lord for not totally scrambling Dean's brains that night. Dean lightly punches his arm, and Cass smiles, warm and open.
"None of that at the table," Dad says, piling mashed potato on his plate.
"No, sir," Cass says with a sly grin. His hand lands on Dean's knee under the table. They eat in silence, save for everyone praising Mom for her amazing cooking. "It's nothing," she says, flushing. Elvis croons out Blue Christmas in the background. Dean puts down his fork and leans over to whisper in Cass's ear.
"I'm happy."
Cass sends him a funny little smile, says, "Well, I'm happy for you being happy." They haven't had sex, or none that Dean can really remember anyway. They kiss, and Dean holds Cass when they sleep, and they talk, and walk places together, and they laugh, and bicker over baseball. Dean wonders how many times he's told Cass he loves him, if he ever even has. The things he doesn't know always seem to outweigh the things he does. He feels like he's learning Cass all over again, and wonders what that must be like for Cass. To have a boyfriend who doesn't remember you, doesn't sleep with you, isn't sure if he even loves you when you've been together 8 years. Cass puts his hand forward to pick up his wine glass, and Dean grabs it, gives it a squeeze.
"Are you okay?" Cass says. His face is a little red from the booze.
"Yeah," Dean says. "I think I am."
"Don't grope at the table, honey."
Mom points her fork at their entwined hands.
Jess giggles.
Dean lets go of Cass's hand and raises his glass. He clinks his fork against it, catching everyone's attention. He looks Cass in the eye and says, "A toast. To the future."
"To the future," the table says at large, everyone clinking their glasses together.
Mom smiles at him.
Dad says, "Winning the lottery'd be good, too."
"Yeah," says Dean. Cass smiles at him. Dean smiles back. And he means it. Winter is rough. Cass helps Dean shovel snow from the drive, all huddled up in a just-too-big jacket with a fluffy inside. He's still wiping the sleep out of his eyes as he pushes the shovel over the soft top layer of snow, letting it pile over the sides of the drive. Dean scrapes ice off the windows of the Impala and vaguely wonders why they'd buy a house without a garage. Cass appears beside him, holding the shovel at his side. His nose is bright red. He says, "I'm too cold. Don't go into work today.
Take a snow day, when I could really just walk there if I could be bothered?"
"Yes."
"You shouldn't work from home," Dean says, shaking his head. "Makes you lazy."
Cass pulls off one of his gloves and presses the palm of his freezing cold hand to Dean's face. Dean flinches back, rubbing his face. You're dead. Cass starts to laugh. He doesn't have a loud, obnoxious laugh, just a soft, low chuckle. He doesn't laugh much, though, and it gets to Dean. He pulls off his own gloves, and before Cass can pull back, he presses the palms of both his own freezing hands to his face. Cass gasps and tries to push him off. His eyes are so bright and playful. Dean presses himself up into his personal space and kisses him. His eyes are still open, and so are Cass's, and he's too cold, and it's kind of weird, but he doesn't care. Neighbors, Cass hisses, pulling back. He casts an eye up the street. Fuck 'em, says Dean. We've lived here for years, and I remember at least 7 months of that, and I've never talked to a neighbor. Mrs. Sim likes me. We both have subscriptions, too. Dean presses his lips against Cass's again, shutting him up. Their coats are too bulky to really get close anyway. Dean presses another quick peck to Cass's lips and pulls back just a bit. He rests his forehead against Cass's, says, You're my best friend. You know that. Cass kisses him, says, Thank you. Dean rubs a thumb along Cass's cheek, his own thank you. Thank you for not expecting too much from me too quick. Thank you for being so patient with me. Thank you for being here. He breathes in deep. Cass doesn't smell like much. We should probably finish clearing the snow. Cass, Dean says, do you believe in Grim Reapers? Huh, Cass says. His nose scrunches up. No. Why do you want to know? It's nothing. The dark tattooed man waves at him from across the street. He has rotten teeth, and his smile is more like a slash against his mouth. Dean buries his face in Cass's neck and breathes deep. It's almost a year after the accident, and Dean finally considers Cass his partner, whatever that means. Cass sleeps like the dead, one naked leg draped over Dean's own. His hair is soft and tickly against Dean's chest. Dean strokes his hand over it lazily. Dean has a gun, just in case, which Cass only just reminded him about. We've never needed it, he says. Have I ever shot someone? I think you went on a pheasant shoot with your dad when you were young. You probably shot a few birds. Huh. Dean ran his fingers over the cold metal of the gun, and it felt familiar in his hand. He flicked off the safety and looked down the barrel of the gun. He pointed it at the TV. He could have pulled the trigger at any time. He didn't think he'd feel bad about firing the gun. Hey, Cass says, putting his hand over Dean's. He pries the gun from his fingers. Dean stared at his empty hand. That's probably not a good idea. No, said Dean. Guess not. Dean runs his hand down Cass's back, says to no one in particular, I think I'm going nuts. But maybe he was always a bit crazy, and nobody wants to be the one to inform him of that fact, so he's not really sure if it's anything new. He closes his eyes. Cass's thigh shifts over his groin, and a little thrill of pleasure sneaks up Dean's spine. Shit, he moans, and tries to shift back. It only makes Cass fall harder onto him. Dean lets out a low breath as his dick starts to stiffen. Cass is all warm and pliant and his in his arms, and yet Dean disentangles himself and pads to the bathroom. He flicks on the light and locks the door behind him. He stands in front of the mirror, underneath the wan ceiling light, and looks at himself. Says, Who are you? Dean loses his cell somewhere and doesn't look for it. He checks out of the shitty motel, the guy at the desk gives him a strange, sympathetic look, and drives. He heads south, and the road is long. Cass eventually appears in the seat next to him. He points his finger toward the speedometer. Dean takes a good look at it and shrugs. He lets his foot off the accelerator a little. Cass pats his pockets down and then frowns. Somebody forgot their notebook. It's enough to make Dean smile fondly. The window starts to steam up on Cass's side. It happens freakishly fast, and Dean goes to open his window, but Cass stops him with a hand on his arm. He touches his forefinger to the window and starts to write. Dean watches, says, Isn't that an abuse of celestial power? One would think you were being reckless on purpose, Cass writes. Dean ignores him. Cass comes out with the weirdest crap sometimes. The window steams over again, and Cass writes, "Your amulet burned hot today." Fascinating. Cass gives him a disappointed look, all big eyes and slack lips. His eyes roam over Dean's face, over his body, over the car, like Cass can take a lot more of his surroundings in than Dean can. He probably can. "You have scratches on your legs." Dean looks at him, ignoring the road, says, "I don't remember what happened, and that's weird and icky. Stop it. You need to talk to someone." "I talk plenty," Dean says, in what he hopes is a loud voice. "I just can't fucking hear any of it." He turns his eyes back to the road ahead. Cass starts to write on the window, and Dean ignores him. When he eventually turns around, Cass is gone. The writing says, "Talk to Michael, Dean." Dean leans across the seat and smears the writing with his hand. The car swerves across the road, and he only just manages to straighten it again. He grits his teeth and drives on. It eventually happens on a Thursday night. Cass is asleep on the couch when Dean comes back from work. Bobby had him in late, finishing off a job, and all he wants is to curl up into a ball and sleep. He pulls off his shirt and dumps it on the floor. His shoes, socks, and jeans follow. They have a rather narrow couch, and he has to push Cass forward against the cushions to slot himself behind him. He pulls Cass back flush against his chest. A little shiver runs through his veins, but it's hollow feeling, like something's missing. It always feels like something's missing, but he doesn't know what. "You're home late," Cass mumbles sleepily. He shifts himself a little to get comfortable and twines his fingers with Dean's own. "Yeah," Dean says. He presses a kiss against the back of Cass's neck. Cass turns himself around, so he's facing Dean. His eyes are soft as he touches a hand to Dean's face, like he's not quite sure. Dean lets him. He runs a hand down Dean's face and over his neck, presses at Dean's shoulder, urging him to lie back. Dean does as best as he can, and Cass climbs onto him, knees either side of his thighs. He kisses Dean's lips. Dean pulls him down as heat starts to pool low in his belly. Cass is only wearing loose pajama bottoms, which he easily shimmies out of. He looks down at Dean with wide eyes. When he starts to pull down Dean's boxers, warily, Dean doesn't stop him. He kicks them off when Cass gets them to his feet. Dean kisses him again, pulling Cass down onto him. "I don't," he mumbles against his lips. "How do we usually..." "Let me," Cass says. He pushes two of his fingers to Dean's lips, and Dean opens up, looks around them, wetting them good. Cass grins at him, and then reaches behind himself. Dean watches his face as he opens himself up, how wild and beautiful Cass looks as he arches back, fucks himself down onto his own hand. Dean wets a couple of his own fingers and reaches behind Cass. His fingers slip in next to Cass's own, and Cass lets out a long, low groan. His head falls back, and Dean kisses along the pale column of his neck. He's almost painfully hard. "Fuck," he breathes against Cass's neck. "You're so tight." "It's been a year," Cass says breathlessly. Dean doesn't know how he hasn't wanted this for so long. He's not going to wait any longer. He pulls his fingers out of Cass, and Cass follows, plants his hands on Dean's shoulders. Dean crudely spits in his own palm and runs it up his dick, once, twice. He says, voice ragged, "Is this... I don't want to hurt you." "You won't," Cass breathes. He presses his forehead against Dean's. "You won't." Dean grabs his hips, hard enough to bruise, and moves Cass so he's right where he wants him. Cass reaches a hand between their bodies and finally, God, finally, slips Dean inside him. He feels the slow drag as Cass slides down him, wants to grab his hips, shove him down, waits as Cass lowers himself down, head thrown back. A little whimper escapes his lips, and Dean's eyes snap to his, asks, "Am I hurting you?" "It's okay," Cass says softly. He sounds pained. "No, we don't have..." "Dean." Cass runs a hand over his face and smiles a little. "I've wanted this for a really long time. Don't stop." Dean kisses him, hot and wet and dirty, and nothing like he ever remembers kissing Cass to be like. He grabs onto his hips and encourages Cass to move. Cass does, slowly. So slowly. Rolls his hips up and toward Dean, back down in a slow drag. The arm of the couch digs into Dean's back and he pushes forward. Wraps his arms tight around Cass's back, rubs them up and down, and tries to concentrate on anything that isn't so fucking hot he's gonna give in any second. Cass picks up pace quickly and rides Dean good. He wonders how many times they've done this before. Cass's back arches and he moans. The sound goes straight to Dean's dick. Fuck. Fuck, he mutters. He starts to move, little experimental pushes into Cass's body, gives a short, quick roll of his hips, and Cass gasps. Oh, Dean, he breathes. Dean. Fuck it, Dean thinks, and grips Cass's waist tight. In one swift move, he has Cass on his back, Dean all over him, and in him, and moving against him. He pushes Cass's leg so it's off the couch and on the floor and grounds his hands on Cass's inner thighs, holding them as open as he can in such a small place. He fucks into him, hard, and Cass's hands come up to wrap around his shoulders. He pants raggedly as Dean fucks into him. So good, Dean mutters. He presses a sloppy kiss to the side of Cass's mouth. Cass's hand slips down between them. He can feel Cass's fist thump low on his stomach as he pumps his own dick. It's all too much, after so long, and Dean presses his lips to Cass's cheek, mutters filthy words under his breath before he fucks into Cass, once, twice, and little stars burst behind his eyes. Cass's walls pulse around him as he gives in too. Dean breathes, hot and moist against Cass's cheek until he comes down, pulls out slowly, but Cass still grimaces. Dean grins down at him, and Cass mutters something about fat asses who squash him. I belong here, Dean thinks. This is where I belong. Dean doesn't see him so much now, his mystery man. Maybe he fades away or something, and for the first time since the accident, Dean honestly believes that things are going to go good. He worried it was death or a grim reaper or something, but Cass's little chat that began with, "So, you believe in angels," has pretty much convinced him that, yeah, he probably got his brains fucked about a bit in the fall. He waits for Cass to follow him through the door and closes it behind him. It's only when they get to the kitchen that Cass starts to talk. You're not scared of much, are you? What? Dean sets his bags down on the counter. There are vegetables he can't even name in there. Cass, who doesn't lower himself to carrying heavy bags, says, "That guy at the market. He could have killed us. You're not Batman, Dean. You shouldn't challenge people like that." "Nah, I could have taken him," Dean says, shaking his head. "He called you a fag." Cass gives him a strange look. He starts pulling groceries out of the bags. "What?" "Nothing." "Cass," Dean warns. "You don't do that. Didn't do that." Cass doesn't look at him. "You're not confrontational. It's just a bit weird for me." "What? You're saying I changed since the accident?" "I don't know," Cass says. Dean helps him unpack groceries. They don't talk about it again, but Cass is a little rougher with him that night when he fucks him against a wall. His fingertips dig into Dean's hips hard enough to bruise. Michael does come. It's been nearly 4 years of nothingness and Michael comes. Michael talks to him and Dean can hear him, can understand him. The airwaves are empty, though, save for Michael's voice. Apparently he's wearing Dean's, like, great-great-great-great-granddaddy or something, lifted all the way from medieval times. He's wearing a nice suit, though. Dean's palms are bloody, and he doesn't know why. Michael looks at him with pity. "You did something to me," Dean spits. "They're under an old bridge, fresh wet mud under their feet. The Impala's covered in it. You're a dick," Dean says. "You said I'd be okay. I tried to kill my brother. I burned a house to the ground. I trapped Cass in fucking holy fire, and I would have killed him. I swear to your God I would have if he hadn't taken me down. What did you do to me, you bastard?" Michael takes a step closer. His eyes hold nothing. "I'm truly sorry, Dean, for your loss." "You're sorry?" You're sorry? I can't thank you, son of a bitch. I think I'm holding a pen and I'm holding a gun. I lose hours of my life and wake up fucking naked in crack dens, and I don't even fucking know how I got there. And you're sorry. That's... Dean sits down in the mud. I feel like I should be a gorilla throwing shit at the walls. You know Cass found God, right? Probably sipping mojitos with him on a deck chair as we speak. Castile has not found God. God is not to be found. Fuck you, Dean says. He pushes his hand deep into the mud and feels it squelch between his fingers. He told me. Michael stands above him suddenly, tall and dark. He covers Dean in shadow. It's grace, Michael says. He looks straight into the sun without squinting. When I killed Lucifer, it was too much for you to handle. Even Raphael couldn't. Your mind will never truly heal. Awesome, Dean says. He doesn't have any shoes, he notices, and he contemplates where they are now. You will be rewarded in heaven. Dean snorts. Your soul remains mostly undamaged. You will only suffer in this life. Michael almost looks sorry for him. It's almost enough to make Dean laugh. He still remembers the light, the searing pain, how Michael hit him so hard and pushed him so far, how Lucifer's blade pierced his stomach and Michael pressed Dean's hand to his heart, how it felt like he was boiling from the inside as Michael disintegrated Lucifer's essence. He hears the screaming in his sleep, the only time he hears anything. "So I can't be a real boy again," says Dean. He looks up at Michael with maniacal eyes. Michael doesn't say much. Doesn't do much. He just stands there, looking around like he doesn't get outside much, and is only vaguely fond of it anyway. Eventually, he passes Dean an envelope. It's white and plain, and Dean lets it fall into the mud. It's a suggestion. Take it or leave it. Michael doesn't leave. He doesn't seem the same without a mission. He strikes Dean as being a bit aimless. Do you know if my brother's okay? Michael stares at him. I let you wear my skin and break my brain. Just give me this one. Sam as well. Michael pauses, then adds. He's been trying to find you for some time. His girlfriend worries for him. Good. That's good that his girlfriend worries. She's probably not a demon then. They don't worry. She's not a demon. Yeah, says Dean. Good for Sammy. Moving up in the world. Michael rests against the hood of the Impala, looking up at the sky. Dean doesn't realize he's been pawing at the mud and looks down to see long, deep grooves where he's dragged his fingers. His nails are filthy, caked in mud and blood. Castiel returned to us, Michael says suddenly. Dean looks up. He's been in our ranks for some time. He never found God, Dean. No one did. He told me. Michael shakes his head. Castiel is closely monitored. He hasn't visited you. I talk to him all the time, Dean says. His voice way too loud. All the sounds are so overwhelming. You don't, says Michael. Dean takes out his cell and scrolls through his dialed numbers. 911, 911, 911, 911. That's not right, he says frantically. I talked to Cass. It's my cell. There's something wrong with it. The envelope, Michael says. Dean feels tears pricking at his eyes. It's something, Michael says. He stands up and dusts off his pants. It's likely better than what I can offer you. We're still weak from the battle. It's only until I die. Yes, says Michael. Take me now, Dean pleads. He's on his hands and knees in the mud. Just kill me now. Take me now. Michael shakes his head, says, Live for now, Dean. He has the envelope in his hand. Clean and new-looking. Dean stares at it, and when he reaches his hand out to take it, Michael is gone. The world goes silent again. Dean tears open the envelope and reads. Then, he lies back in the mud and lets the cold wind wash over him. Tears burn behind his eyes. Dean gets in a fight at Halloween over a game of darts, and Cass has to bail him out. Dean drives them home. He can't look at Cass when he says, Have I ever tended to lean toward violence? Cass glowers at him, and Dean takes that as answer enough. Maybe my true self is trying to break out, Dean suggests, trying to lighten the mood. Cass ignores him. I'm sorry? Dean tries.
You're sorry, Cass echoes.
He folds his hands in his lap, like he doesn't quite know what to do with them. Dean can't ever remember them being awkward in each other's company, mad at each other. It makes his chest hurt oddly. He stops at a red light and turns to face Cass. He's staring at his lap as a little wisp of hair falls in front of his eyes. He pushes it back, and it's such a small thing, but... I'm in love with you.
What?
Cass looks up, startled. I'm in love with you, Dean repeats. I think I've been in love with you for a long time.
I've waited a long time to hear you say that. Again.
Cass grins at him then. Dean smiles back softly. He feels different, somehow. Says lightheartedly, So, does this mean you're not mad at me anymore?
Don't hit anybody ever, says Cass, going for stern but failing. And I think I'll let this one slide.
Deal.
Dean looks up. He's standing there, on the sidewalk, just behind Cass, short and menacing and smirking, showing all his disgusting, uneven teeth. Dean stares at him. The man, Thing, looks down and starts to peel off his cloak. There's strange lettering covering his whole body. Golds and blacks and strange symbols Dean doesn't understand, but suddenly wishes he did.
What is it? Cass says, catching his attention. Dean doesn't let himself take his eyes away. The man continues to watch him with a wicked, slitted smile on his face. Dean memorizes the symbols as best he can. The man winks at him and closes his coat again.
He wants me to remember the symbols, thinks Dean.
Why?
He blinks and the man is gone.
Dean, Cass says. He's looking out the window too, up and down the street.
Dean, what is it? You're worrying me.
Nothing, says Dean. It's nothing.
The car behind him blows its horn loud, and Dean notices the lights flicked to green. He floors the accelerator. Cass watches him silently.
It takes a long time, but Dean finds a guy over the internet who says he can help him. He's a handsome black guy with dreads, and he talks with a southern lilt, calls himself Addy. Dean shows him the sketches he drew earlier. They're mostly accurate as far as he can remember. Addy looks at them closely over a coffee. Dean sips at his own. They're seated near the window in a cheap diner. Everything's red and it fucks with his eyes.
Oh man, Addy says eventually.
He sets down Dean's sketches and hangs his head in his hands.
Oh man, what? Dean demands. What is it? What do they mean?
I ain't no expert. Addy scratches his head. But I think I know what these are. They're not human anyway. That much I'm sure.
Not human, says Dean, feeling suddenly angry. So what? Mineral? Vegetable? Animal? You're gonna have to expand on that, man.
Addy doesn't seem ruffled, says, You believe in the supernatural, Dean? Angels, demons, gods, and all that shit?
I did once. I'd just fallen off a roof. You could have probably told me I was a giraffe and I'd have just went with it.
Maybe you wasn't so crazy then.
Dean sets his mug down too hard.
You should go home, Dean, says Addy. Be better for all of us, believe me.
You have the nerve to tell there's such thing as angels, and I'm supposed to just, what, go home again?
I ain't no expert.
Tell me what you know, Dean begs. Please.
I tell you this, says Addy, shaking his head. He tells Dean what the markings are, why they're there, what they mean, what the man, the thing, what his presence means.
Dean stares at him for a long time after he's finished. You could hear a pin drop.
The waitress gives them both a refill.
Dean gives a little cough, says, And you haven't just been sniffing glue or something?
I think you know this isn't right. I think you know, Dean.
You got a girl?
I got a guy.
Maybe you should go home to him, Addy says smoothly.
This is a very bad idea, Dean.
And this is coming from my auditory hallucination. Well, thanks for the heads up, Cass, but no thanks.
I am not an auditory hallucination. You can see me.
I can also hear you.
You're not real.
Dean follows Michael's map easily. He's got enough gas to get him where he needs to go, and he knows where he's going, finally. He has an end game. It sets off a delicious spark in his veins.
You have a life, Dean. I tried to kill you. They go round a wide bend, and Dean can see it up ahead, finally. I forgive you. That's awesome, Cass, says Dean, brushing him off. But I got plans, see? Fuck off. You don't mean that, Dean. Cass gives him a firm warning, tells him how much of a bad idea this is, how it can't be trusted. Michael's suggestion is fucking awful. Don't go along with it. It can't be trusted. Even Michael has little control over it. Anything could happen. It's more powerful than you can imagine. It can't be trusted. It'll ruin you. It'll ruin your life. Blah, blah, blah. Dean blurs him out. When Cass finally stops, Dean looks at him. Feels sorry for the desperate look on his face, but Cass left. Cass left in battle, and Dean doesn't know why, and Cass left him for heaven, and Dean can take a good guess at why he did that. He searches his brain for the right words, but they're not there. He just starts to talk. There's a light at the end of the tunnel, Cass. You know what I did last week? I laid out all my guns on the bed in alphabetical order according to their names. They don't have any fucking names. I don't even know why I did that. I told the woman in the gas station we had to group together and nuke the Dutch before they take over the world. I kicked a fucking dog to death, and I don't know why. I can't even control myself, and I'm too much of a coward to off myself. I'm dangerous. Cass watches him with a grave expression on his face. I'll be rewarded in heaven later. Do you truly believe that? I have to. I don't have anything else. You have so much, Dean, and you don't see it. I don't know what's real and what's not now. I could be squashing banana in my hair in an asylum for all I know. But if you're real, look after Sammy, okay? Cass doesn't reply. Dean pulls up in front of the abandoned warehouse. He knows it's the right one. He can feel it in his bones. Says, "Did you ever find God, Cass?" "No," says Cass with a confused frown. Dean laughs bitterly. "I'll see you on the other side, Cass. Castiel." He walks toward the old building without looking back. There's a strong wind whipping leaves around his feet, but he can't hear it. He goes inside. Hears the little rustle of wings for the last time, and "I'll see you on the other side, Dean." He starts to look around. Dean feels numb as he drives home. Things make sense. A lot more sense. But on the other hand, they really, really don't. Cass meets him in the hall. He looks all cheerful until he catches a look at Dean and his face falls. "What's wrong?" he says instantly. Dean shrugs. "Dean, how did we meet?" "Meet? We met at college. You dropped hot chocolate on my lap, and being an idiot, I thought it was adorable how you apologized. You know this, Dean. What's going on? What happened?" "You're lying to me, and I don't know if you know it, but you are." "Dean, would you tell me what's going on? Did something happen to you? Are you having an existential crisis or something?" Dean laughs suddenly. He gives Cass a fond look, making him frown even more. "I thought about it. I thought out about it a lot, and I'm happy," he says, shaking his head. "You don't look happy." "I am," says Dean. "Would you rather someone lied to you to protect you from something bad? You know, live in blissful ignorance and all that. Would you even care if you found out it was a lie?" "Are you high?" "Things make sense now. Maybe to you." "I love you, Cass," Dean says. "I love this house, and I love my job, and I love my parents living down the street, and I love how Sam and Jess visit way too much. I don't want to leave because I can't see that it'll be any better. I don't see how it can be any better. I live here. I belong here with you, I think." "You were thinking of leaving me?" "No," Dean says. "Never." Cass stares at him. "Do you believe in guardian angels?" "No." "Well, I think I have one. I think they're looking out for me." "I'm looking at you," says Cass. "I think you've lost it." Dean manages to convince him later that he hasn't totally lost his shit. He tells him he accidentally sniffed glue, and Cass has the decency not to ask how you can accidentally sniff glue, which Dean is glad for. He burns the sketches of symbols. He deletes Addie's number from his cell. He takes Cass to bed and has him writhing and panting under him. He's probably hanging from chains somewhere, yet he can't find it in himself to care. He wonders how broken he was before the accident, that he's willing to take all this shit on faith now. He kisses Cass's forehead and fucks into him smooth and steady. He wonders if he really does have a guardian angel, who he is, and if he'll ever get a chance to say thanks. He places his hand above Cass's heart and leaves it there. Dean can't forget what Addie told him, though, and it really gets to him after a while. He can't stomach food the same, and he starts to wonder if he should do something. It gets to him for a long time. It's almost 4 years since his accident when he meets a guy who looks a little like Cass, which unnerves him. He reversed his Ferrari into a wall, and Dean tells him he'll get to it. It's not been busy. "Thank you," says the stranger. His trench coat whips in the breeze. His stare is intense, conflicted, and totally out of place. The back of Dean's neck prickles. Dean goes to shake his hand, and instead, the man moves right up into his personal space, says, "Enjoy what you have," and touches two fingers to Dean's forehead. "What the fuck?" Dean says, moving back. The man has gone when he blinks, and Dean looks up and down the lot for him. He vanished into thin air. "Freaky," says Dean. The man doesn't come back for his car. He sleeps well that night, his head on Cass's chest. The steady thump-thump lulls him to sleep. He feels light the next morning, rejuvenated. Memories carefully rewritten overnight, he continues about the rest of his day just like a regular guy with an ordinary life. He and Cass have slow, happy sex in the conservatory. He and Dad berate Mom for painting the kitchen a girly, dusty pink color. Jess calls at 3 a.m. and screams down the phone that she's pregnant. Dean smiles, blissfully ignorant. It doesn't take long. The warehouse reeks to hell of ammonia, and it burns Dean's nose and the back of his throat. He can taste it. Cass's voice echoes in his head about how this is a bad idea, how you can't trust the damn thing. Dean shuts him out. This is his only way out. He doesn't care if it is a wicked bastard, according to Cass. This is what's left of his life. This is his shot at a future. It stands there, short and cloaked and tattooed. It has a chain in one hand. Dean sees the gin, and he smiles at it. If I say to you tomorrow, take my hand, child, come with me. It's to a castle I will take you, where what's to be, they say will be. Catch the wind, see us spin. Sail away, leave the day, way up high in the sky. But the wind won't blow. You really shouldn't go. It only goes to show that you will be mine by taking our time.